The appointed time has arrived. We'll call the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on October 21st, 2008. We welcome those of you who have joined us today both in person and listening to the webcast of this meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to propose auditing standards that would update the requirements for assessing and responding to risk during an audit. Before we proceed with the agenda, I will note for the record that board members Gelzer, Gradison, and Niemeyer are present. The first and only order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation that the board propose auditing standards that would update our existing standards on risk assessment. To present the staff's recommendation in this agenda item, I will turn to our Deputy Chief Auditor, Jennifer Rant. Jennifer.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My colleagues from the Office of the Chief Auditor and I are pleased to recommend for public comment 7 proposed auditing standards related to the auditor's assessment of and response to risk. The proposed standards set forth the auditor's responsibilities for certain fundamental aspects of the audit process, such as assessing risk, performing tests of controls, and substantive procedures. Future auditing standards would build on these foundational principles in the proposed standards. The 7 proposed standards include audit risk and an audit of financial statements, audit planning and supervision, identifying and assessing risk, material misstatement, the auditor's response to the risk of material misstatement, evaluating audit results, considering materiality, and planning and performing audit procedures, and finally, audit evidence. The proposed standards would supersede 5 of the board's interim auditing standards, namely AU Section 311, Planning and Supervision, AU Section 312, Audit Risk and Materiality in Conducting an Audit, AU Section 313, Substantive Tests Prior to the Balance Sheet Date, AU Section 319, Consideration of Internal Control and a Financial Statement Audit, and AU Section 326, Evidential Matters. We are also recommending for public comment conforming amendments to the PCOB interim standards resulting from the proposed risk assessment standards. We believe that the board's proposed risk assessment standards, if adopted, would result in improvements to audits of issuers in several ways. First, the proposed standards would update the existing requirements to take into account of the improved risk-based audit methodologies currently in use by some auditors. Second, the proposed standards should enhance integration of the audit of the financial statements with the audit of internal control over financial reporting, resulting in more effective audits. Third, the proposed standards would integrate the auditor's current responsibilities for considering fraud during an audit. And finally, the proposed standards reflect an effort to reduce unnecessary differences with the risk assessment standards of other auditing standard setters. Next, I'd like to turn the floor to Keith Wilson to describe the key aspects of the proposals. Before I do, however, I would like to express my appreciation to Keith Wilson for his significant efforts and leadership on this project. I'd also like to express my appreciation to Hasnat Ahmed and Deanne Jules of the Office of the Chief Auditor, who were important members of the team that helped develop the proposals, and also to Jake Lesser, the Office of General Counsel, for his valuable advice and contributions. During this project, we also received substantial contributions from the board's other divisions, and I'd like to express my gratitude for their assistance. Finally, I would like to acknowledge the efforts of Tom Ray, our chief auditor, who is unable to be here today, but expresses his support for the proposed standards. Keith.
Thank you, Jennifer. Mr. Chairman and members of the board, before I begin, I would like to express my own appreciation to the other staff of the Office of the Chief Auditor for their support for this project, in particular Brian Degano, Dimitro Andrienko, Leslie Guyvers, and Lucia Carumba for lending their talents and expertise to this proposal. Now, turning to the proposal before you today, I would like to discuss each of the proposed standards, make some observations about the conforming amendments, and highlight certain aspects of the proposal for which we are seeking public comment. The proposed standard on audit risk in a financial statement audit defines audit risk and explains the relationship of audit risk to important concepts such as reasonable assurance and sufficient appropriate audit evidence. It also discusses the nature of the risk that comprise audit risk. This proposed standard would not change these fundamental concepts, but gives them more prominence than the existing standards. The proposed standard on audit planning and supervision is a substantial update of the respective interim standard to be more consistent with the other proposed standards. Specifically, the planning portion of the standard focuses primarily on the formation of the audit strategy and the audit plan that guide the audit procedures to be used in an audit. The supervision component of the standard draws largely from the existing standard on supervision, with changes as needed to conform to the other proposed risk assessment standards. Now, the proposed standard on identifying and assessing risks of material misstatement is a significant addition to the auditing standards because it would expand the requirements and direction regarding risk assessment. It describes the auditor's responsibilities for identifying and assessing the risk of material misstatement due to errors or fraud. The proposed standard describes two phases to this risk assessment process: an information gathering phase, which the standard describes as risk assessment procedures, and an analysis phase, in which the auditor identifies and evaluates the risk. In the information gathering stage, the proposed standard would require the auditor to perform risk assessment procedures to obtain sufficient appropriate evidence to identify and appropriately assess the risk of material misstatement. The risk assessment procedures that would be required by the standard cover external factors, such as the company's industry and environment, and internal factors, such as the nature of the company and its operations, business risks that could result in financial reporting risks, methods used to measure a company's performance, and the company's internal control over financial reporting. Under the proposed standard, the amount of attention given to obtaining an understanding of internal control would vary based on the factors set forth in the standard. For example, a more extensive understanding of internal control would be needed for an integrated audit than for an audit of financial statements only, in which the auditor placed little reliance on control. The analysis phase of the process in the standard leads the auditor through a series of steps to evaluate how the risk could affect the financial statements and the potential impact of the risk. This evaluation would include determination of significant accounts and disclosures and irrelevant assertions, which is an important factor in determining the audit procedures to be performed in the audit of internal control over financial reporting and the audit of financial statements. The proposed standard also discusses significant risks, which the standard defines as risks that are important enough to require special audit attention. Existing PCAOB standards already discuss responses to significant risks, and this proposed standard would explain how to identify those risks. The proposed standard on the auditor's responses to the risks of material misstatement would describe the auditor's responsibilities for the general conduct of the audit and the audit procedures performed to address the risks of material misstatement due to errors or fraud. With respect to the audit procedures, the proposed standard explains how the auditor should design and perform the tests of accounts, the substantive tests of accounts, and tests of controls to address the risks, and to calibrate those procedures to the level of risk. That is, the higher the risk, the more audit attention needed to address the risk. In the area of tests of controls, the requirements and direction have been aligned more closely with the corresponding discussion in the internal control audit standards, auditing standard number 5. While the existing interim standards are not inconsistent with AS5, the staff saw opportunities to improve the alignment, which, among other things, should help auditors understand how to align their tests of controls in the financial statement audit with the audit of internal control over financial reporting. The proposed standard on evaluating audit results pulls together the requirements and direction from 5 existing auditing standards, which should lead auditors to consider the totality of the audit evidence they have obtained in forming the opinions expressed in their audit reports. The proposed standard discusses matters such as the evaluation of misstatements on the financial statements, assessing the potential for bias in the financial statements, evaluating conditions that could affect the auditor's consideration of fraud, and determining whether sufficient appropriate audit evidence has been obtained to support the auditor's opinion. The proposed standard on consideration of materiality in planning and performing an audit describes how the auditor should use the concept of materiality in the federal securities laws when making materiality judgments that affect the scope of audit procedures. This proposed standard, like the existing standards, states that to obtain reasonable assurance, the auditor should design and perform audit procedures to detect misstatements that individually or in combination would result in material misstatement of the financial statements. Accordingly, the process described by the proposed standard begins with establishing an appropriate materiality level for the financial statements as a whole and follows with determining how to apply those judgments about materiality to particular accounts and disclosures. For example, the standard would require the auditor to evaluate whether there are particular accounts or disclosures for which a lower level of materiality is warranted when misstatements of lesser amounts could influence the judgment of a reasonable investor. The proposed standard on audit evidence would impose a requirement on the auditor to plan and perform the audit to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence to provide a reasonable basis for his or her opinion. The proposed standard then explains the concepts of sufficiency and appropriateness of evidence, discusses audit procedures to obtain evidence, and methods of selecting items for testing. Now turning to the proposed amendments. The proposed amendments are intended to conform existing PCAOB standards to the proposed risk assessment standards. The vast majority of the amendments are housekeeping items, though there are some significant changes resulting from folding in some of the requirements of the existing fraud standard, and there are some substantive changes to the standards for analytical procedures and audit sampling. Finally, I'd like to make a few observations about the release. The front portion of the release summarizes the objectives of the proposal, the general approach taken to developing these proposed standards, and the expected improvements in audits resulting from these proposed standards. At the end of the document are two appendices that will be important to those who wish to understand and comment on the proposed standards. Appendix 9 of this release discusses each proposed standard, focusing on the changes to the existing standards, along with a summary of the significant conforming amendments. Within that appendix are a series of questions that relate to the new requirements and the expected effect on auditor performance. We would strongly encourage commenters to look at those questions and include answers to those questions in their comments. The last appendix, Appendix 10, identifies notable differences between the requirements of the proposed standard and the respective IAASB standards. We did not try to summarize every difference between those standards, but rather focused on those that we believe would be more significant. And with that, we'd be happy to answer your questions.
Thank you, Jennifer and Keith. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Gelder.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the board instruct the staff to release the proposed standards on risk assessment and propose conforming amendments to the board standards as recommended for public comment for 120 days.
Is there a second?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I second the motion.
Thank you, Dan and Charlie. The staff recommendation before the board today is to propose 7 auditing standards and several conforming amendments that would collectively update the requirements and the existing interim standards for assessing and responding to risk during an audit. The proposed risk assessment standards before us today have been a high priority for the board. For auditors, audit risk is the risk that the auditor will express an inappropriate opinion when the financial statements are materially misstated. Thus, the standards in this area focus on appropriately identifying and responding to the risk of material misstatements. Some of the interim standards that today's proposal would supersede have been in place since the 1980s. So while the concepts of risk assessment and response are not new, certainly audit practices have evolved. The proposals seek to capture these advancements. We are all aware, today more than ever, that risk factors can change and sometimes rather quickly. It is, therefore, crucial that an auditor establish and maintain a sound and current understanding of the company and the environment in which it operates. At our standing advisory group discussion on risk assessment a few years ago, investor advocates stressed this as an important factor and underscored the need to ensure that the auditor maintained an awareness of risks within the client's industry. The proposed standards that the staff have put before the board are responsive to this concern. They place an emphasis on establishing an understanding of the company, both from an internal perspective, such as the business processes, risks, and controls of the company, and an external one, that is, the risks within the company's environment. Equally important, the standards emphasize that responding to assessed risk in an appropriate manner is key to a high-quality audit. Investor advocates at our strategic advisory group discussion stressed the importance of the risk assessment having an impact on the audit from the beginning to end. I couldn't agree more. The best processes to identify a risk will be meaningless if the audit procedures are not tailored to respond to these risks. The proposed standards reflect this view. Keith Wilson noted that a number of the changes in the standards that the board is considering today are not necessarily novel. As he observed, there were a number of inputs to the development of these proposed standards, including improvements that many firms have made in their audit methodology. In addition, we've had input from the following: advice from the board SAG, the PCAOB's auditing standard number 5, and also observation from the board's oversight activities. In addition, staff carefully considered and utilized, to the extent possible, the provisions of the risk assessment standards of the IAASB. While certain changes were necessary, the proposed standards reflect a good degree of commonality with the substance of the international standards on auditing. An important improvement contained in today's proposals is the move to integrate and emphasize the auditor's responsibilities to consider the risk of fraud during the audit. The purpose of this change is to prompt auditors to make a more thoughtful and thorough assessment of the risk of fraud and to develop appropriate audit responses. We have heard concerns from investors and identified issues through our inspections that some auditors have appeared to view the consideration of fraud as an isolated mechanical process rather than an integral part of the audit. Today's proposals should send an important message that the board views assessing the risk of fraud as a central part of the audit process rather than a separate consideration. Today's proposals are not designed to be a one-size-fits-all approach. Instead, the proposed standards describe a risk assessment process that should result in audit procedures tailored to the audit client's size and complexity. We encourage commenters to focus on this and other areas that staff have highlighted in the proposing release to ensure, among other things, that the proposals provide a sound framework with an appropriate level of flexibility. Because these standards are foundational, we are providing a longer than usual 120-day comment period. It is critical that they benefit from a cross-section of comments. Thus, I encourage investors, issuers, and in particular audit committee members, auditors, academics, and other interested parties to take the time to review and comment on all aspects of this set of standards. I can assure you we will carefully consider each comment in an effort to improve the final standards. Before I conclude, I would like to thank Tom Ray, Keith Wilson, Jennifer Rand, and all of the other members of the Jennifer and Keith I mentioned for their hard work on these 7 proposed standards and conforming amendments. I also want to thank Jake Lesser, the Office of the General Counsel, who collaborated with our standards team. It was no easy effort to bring this suite of standards to the proposing stage today, and I thank each of you for your contribution to this important initiative. I'll now turn to my fellow board members for any discussion. And we'll start with Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I, too, want to compliment and thank the staff that have worked so long and so hard on these very important standards. For the first time, the PCAOB is putting out a new standard for comment that includes an extensive comparison of its proposal with the standards promulgated by another standard setter, in this case, the Risk Assessment Auditing Standards of the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, the so-called ISAS. I would hope that the PCAOB would continue to put out such comparative information in connection with future proposals for new PCAOB standards. We're fast entering an auditing environment with 3 differing standards, especially as the PCAOB gradually replaces its interim standards, the pre-2003 Auditing Standards Board standards, and the ASB revises its standards, using the ISIS as the base, that is, ISIS Plus. I don't know whether over the long run having three standards is sustainable, but as long as there are three standards, I believe that each standard setter, including ourselves, has a responsibility to make it as clear as possible how its standards differ from those of the other two standard setters so that practitioners know what is expected of them. Today's board action, in my mind, is a constructive step in that direction. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Charlie. I do support releasing the proposed risk assessment standards for public comment. The proposal incorporates into the financial statement audit important concepts related to the audit risk that we developed in AS5. For auditors who perform internal control audits, these concepts should be familiar and should encourage even closer integration of the audit. The proposed standards also reflect an effort to evaluate and adopt certainly adapt certain procedures developed by the auditing profession under the auspices of the International Federation of Accountants. It has been useful to look at best practices and other ideas that the firms have developed, and I hope and expect that the board will continue to do so in future standard-setting projects. I must say, though, that the instruction to begin with IFAC standards as a template has made the drafting more complicated. I suspect that we would have before us a much simpler document if we had started with a clean slate. Moreover, people who are familiar with the ISIS are not necessarily going to recognize them in the proposal. And yet the exercise of starting with those standards and adapting them for our purposes have consumed considerable resources. I hope the board would consider the cost-benefit balance before doing so again in another standard-setting project. This leads me to a point about form that I hope commenters will consider. Each of the proposed standards contains a statement of an objective adapted generally from such statements in the corresponding ISIS. To my mind, well-crafted objectives could be a good way of describing a required outcome while giving auditors flexibility to design effective and efficient ways to achieve that outcome. For the most part, though, the objectives stated in the ISIS and the proposed standards adapted do not state required outcomes, but rather just summarize the topic of the standards. Without required objectives, the standards are left to require specific procedures. There may indeed be some procedures that we believe should be performed. But as we continue to develop these standards, I'd like to consider whether straying from the IFAC model may allow us to be more flexible in suggesting procedures and also permitting auditors to develop different techniques, so long as they demonstrate that they have successfully achieved the desired outcome. And finally, the great efforts put into adapting the ISIS for our purposes have distracted the initiative from some areas that I think deserve more attention, such as evaluating risk in large audits or multi-location audits. These are particularly thorny challenges in auditing, and I suspect auditors would welcome some new thinking on techniques to address these areas. And I encourage commenters to consider these areas as well. I would like to also thank the staff, Jennifer Keith, Jake, and everyone else who was involved with this. I know it's been a lot of hard work. I appreciate your efforts.
Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A sound and sophisticated understanding of the risks of material misstatement and planning and executing the audit in a way that responds to those risks are essential to affording investors reasonable assurance that financial statements are free of material error. The board's mandate is to ensure quality auditing and to promote confidence in audit reports. Therefore, focusing on the risk assessment process and the auditor's response to risk is one of the most important steps we can take to strengthen the auditing standards. This effort is especially timely given current events in our financial markets. I support publishing these 7 proposed standards for comment. Reliably identifying risk is not a simple task or one that lends itself to predetermined formulas and checklists. Rather than adding to what's already been said about the specific approach to that process that's in these proposals, I'd like to underscore several points about this project itself. First, it seems to me that this proceeding marks something of a new direction in our standard setting. So far, most of the energy the board has devoted to writing auditing standards has been aimed at fulfilling specific statutory tasks in the Sarbanes-Oxley Act.
particularly developing an internal control auditing standard and a standard for concurring partner review. Risk assessment is the first major effort to do what I think Congress envisioned when it gave the board the authority to set public company auditing standards. Step back and ask how the existing standards can be strengthened to meet the challenges of modern auditing. Second, as has been noted, the staff began formulating the risk assessment standards by looking at the comparable provisions of the international auditing standards, the ISAs. The board is still feeling its way in trying to determine what the relationship between PCAOB standards and the ISAs should be. At least for now, an approach that tries to avoid needless inconsistency, but that stops short of seeking conformity for its own sake, seems to me to make sense. I think these proposals have benefited from the effort that went into looking first at the ISAs. However, the resulting package of standards is by no means a twin to the ISAs. Cousins, or perhaps distant cousins, might better describe the family relationship. The release includes an appendix that provides a high-level comparison between these proposals and the comparable ISAs. The merits of the approach taken here is one of the areas in which I hope we'll receive thoughtful comment. Third, unlike other board standards, each of these proposals includes a brief statement of the audit objective that the standard is intended to fulfill. Here, too, the board needs the views and suggestions of commenters to make sure the objectives are phrased in a way that will be useful in guiding auditors, particularly in areas that demand judgment. The final point I'd like to make relates to the transparency and openness of the board's standard-setting process. This project began about 3 years ago with a public discussion of audit risk assessment by the board's standing advisory group, and ideas from that meeting are reflected in the proposals. The staff is recommending a 120-day comment period, longer than what's been our norm in the past, to afford ample opportunity for public input. Depending upon the nature of the comment, I hope we'll consider additional steps to promote transparency. Possibilities could include publishing a revised proposal and opening a second comment period, depending upon the comment we get, or based on the comment we get in this first round. We may also want to hold additional public forums or board discussions to consider the comments. For a project of the magnitude and importance of risk assessment, we need to make sure that investors in the profession understand what we're seeking to accomplish and that we understand the practical consequences of any new standards. A tremendous amount of thought and effort has already gone into this project, and I'd like to join in thanking the staff members involved. I won't try and name everyone. I know that's been done already, but I'll just mention Keith Wilson particularly, who's, I think, pretty much lived and breathed this project for the last 2 or 3 months. Certainly takes nothing away from that work to add that, more than in the case of some other proposed standards, I view the risk assessment project as one that's still unfolding. I look forward to input and dialogue that will help the board make sure that these standards are well-tailored to sophisticated audit risk assessment and high-quality auditing. With that, there were just a couple of things I wanted to ask about. I mean, there's so much here that would be interesting to talk about. I'm sure we could go on all day, but maybe just a couple of things. There's been some mention of the objectives already. Each of the standards includes an objective. In general, they're in the form of a declaratory statement. For example, the proposed standard on audit risk in an audit of financial statements says, the objective of the auditor is to conduct the audit of the financial statements in a manner that reduces risk to an appropriately low level. Hugh Niemeyer's comments, I think, flag the fact that that isn't stated, at least directly stated, as a requirement. I wonder, Keith or Jennifer, if you can comment on whether that is a requirement. Can the objective be violated if it is a requirement, or what level of a requirement? Is it a must requirement or a should requirement?
I'd be happy to answer that question. The way we've structured the objectives is they are not to impose a requirement necessarily. We do not, as you read the phrase, there was no language from our rule, Board's Rule 3101, so there was no must statement or should statement or other statements like that that would impose a direct obligation. With that said, however, there are other requirements in each of the standards that do use terms as defined under Board's Rule 3101 with musts and shoulds. So we believe that if the auditor follows, adheres to those requirements, they would in effect meet the obligation, but stated in and of itself, the objective does not impose a specific obligation. We are certainly interested in comments and feedback on this point, whether we should use such language in the Board's Rule 3101, such as must and should, in articulating those objectives, but currently right now that's how the objectives are phrased.
Okay. There's an exception, though, isn't there?
There is one.
The standard on audit planning and supervision includes a second sentence. Accordingly, the auditor must adequately plan the audit and properly supervise the members of the engagement team. I mean, that is a must requirement. I mean what's the thinking of having what I take it is, well, maybe I should ask you the question, is that an enforceable requirement? Does it contain the word must? And if so, why is that one different?
Well, in that particular case, what we were trying to do, it's not necessarily part of the objective, although it certainly is in line with the objective, and we would expect that must statement to be an unconditional responsibility that would be enforceable, that is in line with the overall objective, and that's generally the way we tried to approach it, was to construct requirements that would lead the auditor toward fulfilling that objective, and that was one case where we felt like that was an important statement to make in that particular standard. And I will add that we feel very consistent with the requirement for planning and supervision, for example, in AU-150.
Okay, well, I mentioned it because I think as several of us have noted, this idea of objectives is somewhat new for us. I think it can be a useful tool in helping the auditor understand what the standard is supposed to accomplish and therefore affording guidance in all the judgment areas that are inherent in the process. And I hope people will comment about whether these are the correct objectives or whether they can be strengthened or made clear. Let me ask you about something else. Keith, in your comments, I think you talked about the relationship to AU-316, the existing fraud standard. And at least to me, one of the themes here is to take the kind of process that AU-316 describes in identifying the risks of fraud at the beginning of the audit and expanding that or spreading it to a more general consideration of the risks of material misstatement. What's left of AU-316? Why do we need an AU-316? I take it that while you make some amendments to the fraud standard, the fraud standard will remain. What's the relationship between that and the new standards? Why do we need both?
Well, what the elements of the existing fraud standard that we brought into the risk assessment standard are the specific principles related to identifying fraud risk and assessing fraud risk and designing procedures that are generally responsive to fraud risk and evaluating results. What is left in there is still, I think, very important information. There is a general discussion about the auditor's responsibilities with respect to fraud that remains in that part of the standard. And there's also more specific procedural requirements and direction related to specific elements such as journal entry testing and other kinds of specific procedures that would be part of the auditor's response to fraud risks. We think it's important to continue to have that because, frankly, fraud is such an important consideration. But at the same time, we want the reason for folding those requirements into the risk assessment standards was to try and make that the consideration of fraud a central part of the overall risk assessment process.
Okay, let me turn to a different one. There's, again, as I think you mentioned in your comments, there's a proposed standard on consideration of materiality, as there is in the existing auditing standards. maybe the first question is, would that proposed standard change or interpret the definition of materiality?
Now, the standard begins with the concept of materiality in the federal securities laws. It does not seek to interpret or modify that in any way. What it does is try and help provide information for the auditor to understand how to take that concept and apply it in terms of determining the scope of audit procedures.
I just wanted to bring that question. Presumably that's obvious to most auditors, at least, but we're not the deciders on materiality, so
right.
People aren't happy with materiality. Please address your comments to the FTC, not us. Along those lines, there's a statement in that standard that says that the auditor should evaluate uncorrected misstatements based on qualitative and quantitative factors. And again, perhaps not a surprising statement or not a change. I was kind of struck that the SEC's recent advisory committee on complexity and financial reporting devoted some discussion to the relationship between quantitative and qualitative factors in evaluating the materiality of misstatements. Would our proposed standard be compatible with what CIFR has said, or the way in which the SEC might implement CIFR? I mean, was any thought given to the CIFR report in drafting that portion of that standard?
Well, I guess in light of, I would say, similar to what I just said, we're not trying to provide any specific guidance about materiality and to interpret the concept of materiality as it exists in the federal securities law. So we recognize that materiality considerations, as set up in the federal securities laws, does recognize the consideration of both quantitative and qualitative factors. So we have a requirement for the auditor to consider those, but we don't get into the particulars of how they might look at those factors and weight one versus the other.
Yeah, again, I guess from my perspective, it's an effort to make sort of the same point. But it's a question of the role of qualitative factors in evaluating materiality is one that's been much discussed, at least since SAB 99 came out and maybe before then. And again, it's not really our jurisdiction to modify or change those principles.
Right.
Maybe sticking with materiality, but I'll ask about it in a little different context. Again, as I think you noted in your comments, there's an appendix at the end of the release that people will discover entitled Additional Discussion of Proposed Auditing Standards and Conforming Amendments. And that's it's really an analysis or description of each of the proposed standards. What's the authority level of that material? Does that impose requirements? Is it enforceable? Does it have requirements in it beyond the text of the standards themselves?
I can take that one. The appendices that you refer to are not intended to impose requirements. Rather than being provided for illustrative purposes to help, as Keith said, to help explain the standards and our thinking behind the proposed standards. And that level of authority or not having, not imposing a requirement, we would expect would continue when the board were to adopt the final standards. So if we were to have similar language, that it would not be intended to impose a requirement. The standards themselves would impose the requirement, and that would just be there for illustrative explanatory information.
So, for example, I mean, appendix, in its discussion of materiality, the appendix talks about the fact, again, not a new concept, that the judgment of a reasonable investor might be influenced by a misstatement at a smaller level of materiality than for the financial statements generally with respect to some particular account. And then it contains some examples of where that kind of lower level of materiality might be appropriate. What's the significance of the fact that those examples are in Appendix 9 rather than in the standards themselves? Because the standards do have, at least in notes, some things that could be viewed as examples.
Yeah, this was placed in there just to try and help provide a little bit more context to the particular point about considering instances in where in which a lower level of materiality might be warranted, because misstatements might affect the judgment of a reasonable investor. So the intent was just to provide some situations where that might be the case, but not necessarily propose any kind of additional requirement, because it's a concept, as you mentioned, that is outside our jurisdiction. And in some other cases, we have provided examples, but they tend to be more procedural in nature, to help someone understand what a particular audit procedure is intended to accomplish.
I think you didn't touch on in your comments is the interplay between these standards and auditing standard number 3, the documentation requirement. I'm going to guess, obviously, under general concepts of AS3, what is done as part of the risk assessment process and the steps taken in the audit will have to be reflected in the work papers. Are there any more specific documentation requirements in these standards? I guess what I'm thinking, for example, is, will our inspection staff or perhaps the concurring partner, the engagement quality reviewer, be able to find a statement in the work papers as to the assessed risks that the audit team identified as part of the planning of the audit? Will that be in one place in the work papers, or simply the steps and work be spread out through the work papers? Do we give any guidance on that subject in these standards?
Well, we looked at that, and this is an area that we're very interested in getting comment on. We looked at that and looked at the requirements of AS3 regarding documentation, and noted that AS3 requires the auditor to document procedures performed, evidence obtained, and conclusions reached with respect to relevant assertions. It requires the auditor to document compliance with the requirements of the standards of the PCAOB, and it was our view that the requirements of AS3 as written would be adequate to cover the documentation for the requirements of the standard. Now, to your specific question about a summary of risks, I think if you look at the process that's laid out in the standards, and you look at the fact that the auditor is going to need to have adequate responses to those risks, it would be, in my mind, very difficult, virtually impossible, to do that without somehow coming down with a summary of the risks and what the risks were, what the assessment of the risks were, and what the linkage is between the audit procedures and those risks. So I think it's inherent in the way AS3 would lead the auditor to look at these standards. However, we did tee that up quite a bit in the appendix that I mentioned earlier at the back of the release. We listed some specific examples of things that we thought AS3 would require the auditor to do with respect to the document compliance with these standards, and ask for specific feedback on whether or not we needed to provide individual specific documentation requirements in the standards. So we're very much eager to get feedback on that point.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that. That's really the reason I asked the question, because I think that is an area where it would be useful to get comment and maybe comment in part. I think we need to give some thought to whether we should have a more concentrated, a more focused requirement to document sort of an overview of the risk assessment in a single place in the work papers. And again, I think particularly about the obligations we're proposing to impose on engagement quality reviewers to identify the risks in the audit. It might be useful to them if they could look in a single place to get the engagement team thinking. Well, look, I'll finish with just one extremely general question, and I'm sure we'll hear about this in comments too, but I would be interested in your view. Particularly from the viewpoint of the largest firms in the country, to what extent do you see these proposals in the form they're in today as changing the way that they conduct risk assessment, and what impact do you see them having on the cost of auditing?
Well, I would say, first of all, the proposed standards here, I would not say was any attempt to reinvent the wheel. We're not trying to create out of whole cloth a new process, but what we are trying to do is take into account improvements that have been made, particularly by the large firms, in their process for assessing and responding to risk, and also to help hopefully create some improvements in that process. So I don't know that we would find that there will be a lot of new requirements or the formulations used in the standards would generate a significant amount of increased audit effort. But that's another area that we're very interested in seeking comment on. What are the expectations when auditors look at that? Do they maybe have a different perspective? And what's the perspective of others as well on the value of the procedures as laid out and the perceived level of effort that's associated with them? So we have a lot of questions in that appendix in the release that are around those kind of areas of the expected impact on auditor performance.
Well, again, I appreciate that. I think it's important that we get those comments. That we've been at this now for, 6 years, and I think sometimes we find that people have a different view of what the impact on auditing and the cost of auditing is going to be of our proposals than we have, and it is important that we get that information. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, one more comment?
Yeah, yes. I apologize, but Mr. Gelder had a question, and just if I could just have a point of clarity. When we talk about appendices and that they're illustrative only, to the extent the language within the appendix is actually saying that the auditor should do something, it was meant that the auditor should do it, right?
Well, for the most part, I'm trying to search my memory here, but for the most part, I think when we've said auditors should do something, we're trying to be reflective of what the requirements are in the standard. So to that extent, I definitely think that's the case. If there's a point where in which we said should that wasn't somehow derived from the standard, then that would be, I guess, something we'd have to look at. But.
Thank you. It probably is something that, as this process goes along, we need to focus on. Because one of our comments about the ISIS has been that the authority level of their application material isn't clear, and we don't want to back into the same problem.
Right. We've spent some time focusing earlier on determining what should mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just want to make sure we don't confuse that by saying that because it's in the appendix that it doesn't mean what we intend for it to say.
And let me just make Since you brought that up, let me clarify one thing, because we talked about a lot of appendices here. There are appendices to the standards themselves. A couple of these standards actually have appendices, and those appendices are part of the standard. So they would definitely create an auditor responsibility.
Sure.
The appendices we've been usually talking about have been the explanatory appendices right at the very end of the release, but certainly the appendices to the standards definitely have requirements.
Thank you. Okay. There's no further discussion. I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and the motion is carried. Board member Steve Harris, who had an unavoidable conflict and could not be here today, asked that I indicate his support for these standards and for moving the standards forward. There being no further business, the meeting is adjourned. We will now rise from the open meeting and reconvene at 10:30 in the closed meeting. Thank you very much.